You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Bill Whitaker and Tommy Alquist. Bill is the former CEO of the J.R. Simplot Company and is now a full-time adventure seeker and philanthropist. Tommy is the CEO of BVA Development, co-founder of Crush the Curve Idaho, and most importantly, a full-time grandfather. Each episode focuses on sharing the stories of individuals who are changing the world.
Welcome to this week's episode of Inspire Excellence Podcast. We have a very special guest this week. We're excited. Joining Bill and I is Mike Boren, founder of Clearwater Analytics here out of Boise, Idaho, and also a good friend and outdoor enthusiast, pilot. I'm trying to think of all the ways to describe
you. Mule Skinner.
Mule Skinner.
Absolutely.
Mike just got here and pulled out a picture of an elk that he just shot with son-in-law last week. Big time outdoorsman. Mike, we appreciate you and look forward to today's conversation. And I know you well, but I want to start with telling us a little bit about growing up in Idaho.
Okay. Well, my father was a professor, so we did move around a little bit. He taught in Utah and Indiana and Montana, but finally moved to Boise State. But the one constant was we spent every summer, the whole summer, in the Sawtooths. My dad has spent every summer of his life there and lives there full time now. And that was a great gift that he gave to us, that we were always in Idaho for the full summer in the mountains.
So I know Dave and you pretty well. Talk a little more about your dad. He's a legend. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And you were raised by a legend. Quick story about him. I hadn't seen him for a while, and I saw him at your place about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And he just had a valve replacement. Okay. And was pretty sick before it. Actually, was passing out, driving himself down to the hospital. Like really sick. And had this valve replacement. And I was excited to see him to say, "Hey, how are you doing?" And he looked great. And I went up to him and I said, Hey Bob, how are you doing?" And he looked at me, said, "I've never felt better." And he just started talking. And he's like the most optimistic person I've ever been around. Tell me about your dad, because he's something else.
Well, one of the things he told me, I think that same night, was, "Remember when you promised me that if I got down to a certain weight," which was like 60 pounds off, "you would take me elk hunting again on one of your mules?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, I'm back to the weight where I got married. You owe me a hunt." My dad's 84. Almost 84. He's 84 next week. And he's a tough old bird, and he's an interesting guy. When I was young, he had a plaque on the wall that someone had given him. It had a picture of him, and it said, "Bob Boren, the great peacemaker." And my dad and my mom argued like crazy at the dinner table every single night. Now, they were both national collegiate champion debaters, and so that was sport. But if you just met him at the dinner table, you would wonder about the peacemaker thing. But he is. Everybody loves him. He helps everybody. He's just a genuinely nice guy. And I'm hopeful that, you know, sometime within the next 40 years, I get like 1% of that, because I'm not a very good peacemaker.
But my dad, you got the debater, though.
I got the debater part, and maybe the rest will come eventually. But he's just a genuinely nice guy. Everybody likes him. He retired early from Boise State and promptly got busier than he'd ever been. At one point, I think he was either the chairman of the board or a board member for 9 organizations, including a big national utility, and just a busy but happy and productive guy. Really great guy. Having said that, he also seems to find time to fish about 5 or 6 days a week.
So, yeah, 84.
In that part of Idaho, I can't tell everyone you meet, "Hey, you know Bob? You met Bob." He's a legend up there.
So one little quick story. My wife was in the grocery store up there, and she was talking to the sheriff's deputy, and he was with a new sheriff's deputy, and he introduced her as Bob Boren's daughter-in-law. And the guy said, "Who's Bob Boren?" And the deputy said, "You don't know Bob Boren? He's the richest guy in this area." He's a college professor, but he really is, because he has so many friends, and he's just, you know, has rich experiences. He's a really good guy. So thanks for asking about it.
Yeah, that's great.
What before we get off your father, because I just love the guy, what's the number one lesson he taught you, Mike?
Oh, I remember riding. This is interesting you'd ask that. I remember riding in the truck with him He had a 55 Dodge, and you could see the highway underneath your feet because it had broken up wood floorboards. We're driving in his 55 Dodge somewhere to go fishing, and I was talking about all my plans. And I was going to do this and that, and I was going to make a lot of money. And I had like three or four things that were big wish list items. One was to have a home in the Sawtooth Valley. Another was to have a jet, and another was to be a helicopter pilot. And I was telling all this stuff, and you know, I was just anxious to get going on life. And he said, money is not that hard to come by, but time and friendship. Wow. Those are hard things. Yeah. And he said, everybody has the same amount of time or less, and you don't know how much you have. And he said, take good care of your time. And I've always remembered that. And it was, you know, we're just driving along. It wasn't like this big philosophical question or conversation. You just.
Good for him.
That's a piece of advice that's always, has always stuck with me. And I've really tried to avoid the concept of quality time with my kids, for example, and focus on quantity of time and spend real meaningful time with my family. And that's because of my dad. He always did that.
Is that the advice that we have a lot of young entrepreneurs that listen to this, a lot of business leaders? Balance, finding balance in their life, I think, is as hard as ever. We're just connected all the time. It seems like you can't go anywhere without having a call or a text or an email. I know you do that, and I've been around you and your kids, and I think that's part of your legacy, truly, is, I mean, you and your kids do things together, like real things. How easy is that? Is it, you have to be very intentional with it? How do you not let, because you also are incredibly successful business-wise, and I know no one has a bigger drive than you, but how did you put limits on yourself, or because we talk about it a lot. Everyone I know says, hey, we got to find balance, got to find balance, got to always check yourself. What did you find that kept you in check?
I wasn't looking for balance. I made a commitment that the most important thing for me was raising a good family. And I spent time with my kids. Mm. And it was often to the detriment of my business. Mm. There have been times in my life where I truly didn't have the time to do both. And I always have spent real meaningful time every week with my children, every night if I could. And I can remember when I had a struggling business and times were tough, and we had a year where we didn't make any money. And every night, almost every night, let's say five nights a week, at the kitchen table, I spent doing math with my 13-year-old daughter that didn't have it figured out. Mm. That's Amanda, who, as you know, is a superstar. And nobody would think that, but when she was young, she didn't read till the third grade, and she struggled with math. And I spent time I didn't have, and it was the best time I ever spent.
There you have it, Amanda. He's going public on you. And but I can tell you're proud of her also.
Oh, she's great. Yeah, everybody that knows her would say that. She's a really great kid. And it's not because we sat at the dinner table doing math, but I think it is partly because her mother and I focused on making sure that we had meaningful time, meaningful quantities of time with our kids. And we still try to do that.
Awesome.
You know what? What's interesting to me about this whole balance thing, that I think we all kind of sort through it. You and I, Tommy, we've talked about it. You know, what does it mean? What does it look like? And I really like your answer on that, Mike. At the same time, I don't know if we need to be intentional about balance. I think we need to be intentional about what's important to us.
I agree.
And I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it. I mean, instead of saying don't find balance, prioritize and make sure you're taking care of your top priorities first, and things will work out.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, you know, just play all the time. You can't be successful in business without working hard.
No.
But you're playing more now than you used to.
I don't know if I actually am. I probably am, but it seems pretty busy.
Well, so, all that I know is I want him to take me elk hunting, because he does not shoot elk. I don't know if he's not capable, or he just gives them all up to his guests. And that's pretty amazing that you've missed getting an elk how many times?
Oh, I just don't focus on that.
You take care, right? I think it's fantastic.
And I just really enjoy it. And it's not about shooting an elk. It's about being out in the woods right. hunting for them. It's always more fun for me to be hunting than just walking around aimlessly.
Yeah.
But
A shifting gears to Clearwater, because I think a lot of people know the story. I think I've known you for a long time, and just watching the way you worked with your partners, which the founders were you and your brother Dave and then Doug Bates, mm-hmm. and watching your relationship and then how hard you worked and the vision you had for where this thing was going. I love the story. Tell us a little bit about that ride, that journey, and where you guys started, and then you had an exit recently. But the number of jobs you've created, the lives you've created and livelihoods you've created along the way. I know that was really important to you too. For anyone that's growing a business, talk about how important having a vision is and the direction and the partnerships you had. Cause I think you're a great example of that.
Well, and the partnerships is important and flexibility is important. I will say right now that I am not the greatest original innovator or inventor out there. And in fact, we had a fourth partner. It was Dave, Doug, and me, and Chris Growney that started Clearwater. And really, Chris came to us with the idea, and we adapted it and ran with it and modified it. And we stayed in the business longer than he did. But Dave and I started a hedge fund in 1995 together and left our other businesses. Dave was a portfolio, an internal trader, portfolio manager at Goldman Sachs. And I had a brokerage business in Chicago. And we started a hedge fund so that we could be here in Idaho with our families. And have our families be supportive of each other, which has worked out to be really great. And later we brought Doug Bates in, and we were just managing money for people. And Chris came along with this idea of being able to do really good investment portfolio reporting that no one was doing. And we said, well, in fact, we're already doing that for all of our hedge fund clients. And we showed him our reporting. He said, this is exactly what we need, but for the institutional investment market and the corporate treasury market. And we hadn't thought of that. So we started Clearwater Advisors with him to manage money for people and do all this great reporting. And then one of our clients made it clear to us that the reporting was a lot better than the money management and we should focus on that. And so we ran with that. And there have been consistent opportunities to refine what we did and do better things and more things based on the ideas that our clients came to us with. And I think if I was to really say, you know, if you asked me what we were the best at, I would say it's adapting to the needs of clients. Mm-hmm. So listening That's to great. People and providing what's best for them rather than what we think might be best for them. And that's,
I've got several Mike-isms, things that you say all the time that just really stick with me. But oftentimes I've been in a meeting with you and we'll be talking about something that's relatively complicated or we're trying to find our way. And you'll just say, it's easy. Just do something that'll make someone's life better. You say that all the time. Will it make you better? Is the purpose of your goal, your business to help people have better lives? And it simplifies it so much that everyone's like, oh yeah, we just need to do the thing that will make someone's life better. And so I'll always, in fact, I've started using it. I try to give you credit most of the time.
You don't have to give me credit. I'm sure I stole it from somebody, but isn't that what we're about, right? And every business that we're in is satisfying the client, is delighting the client, is making the client happier, more successful, making the client in my business have more free time to go to their kids' lacrosse game or basketball game or go do things with their family because we made their lives easier at the end of the month.
Yeah. Clayton Christensen talked about it being what job needs to be done. I mean, there's a lot of jobs that need to be done for me. But he used to talk about at Harvard what job needs to be done. So,
yeah. And there's an interesting thing there. Plenty of times the client doesn't actually know for sure what that job is or what's going to make him or her more happy or successful, but the market in general tends to know. So it's important to listen to the client, but not always do exactly what one client thinks is the best thing. Just listen to all of the clients and then produce something that's ubiquitous that solves problems for everyone.
Important statement. Seriously, that's valuable. So, Mike, when you talk about innovation and talk about how, so what you're saying is this, so Clearwater may not been about just pure, this is where the market's going. We're going to differentiate ourselves with something incredibly innovative. What you guys really did is just said, there's something that needs to happen here. And there's a value point that's not being served in the marketplace, and you guys addressed it. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Yes, and then we modified it every day.
Did you really?
Because that's another thing that's important to me is I want to, at the end of the day, be better at serving my client than I was at the beginning of the day, or the day was a failure. And Doug Bates is all about that. That's one of his big things is, am I smarter and better and more capable at the end of the day? And I would just modify that to, am I doing a better job for the client
good
today than I was yesterday?
Yeah.
And if I am, yesterday was a success and today started out well.
Right.
But you got to get better every day because, you know, it's grow or die. And competition is a wonderful thing. Pricing is a wonderful thing because it teaches you a lot. And you've got to be able to adapt and be better every day.
Yeah.
There's no value to doing the same thing for your client today that you did a year ago.
Oh, you know, I remember when Clearwater came into play and I used to go, what is Clearwater? You know, what's going on with Clearwater? Yeah. You know, do they deliver water to your house or office or whatever? I'm joking, but the point of it is, it's in a move from being, hey, Clearwater, this is pretty interesting, to, wow, look what Clearwater's doing. And then all of a sudden you're kind of going, it's one of the absolute rock star companies, not just in our area, but in your field of work. And so it's a real compliment to the three of you for what you've created. I've watched it closely for the last, I guess, 8 or 10 years. Before that, I was in the what is Clearwater mode.
Yeah. I think a lot of people have been in that because we didn't spend a lot of time in Boise talking about what we do, because we spend a lot of time talking to clients about what they need.
Yeah. Good point.
We haven't been so great about marketing until, I think, more recently.
Yeah.
Hey, talk about one other. I just thought it was curious just because it's different than anything I've seen, is the first time we spent some time together, and remember going to your building and you had the three of you in one office. And I just thought, oh, these guys are, you know, kind of bootstrapping a little bit, being conservative on space, and they're all jammed in one office together, right? And then when you went to your new building downtown, one of the key principles was, no, we're all in the same office. Mm-hmm. You don't see companies do that, right? Where, I mean, I hadn't. And so it's super interesting to me, but talk about why that was important to you for someone that might be listening out there, of the three of you being on the same page.
I think we were fortunate in the industry that we came from, which was fixed income investment management, where you might sit in a giant room or you might be in a trading pit with 500 people and there's all this extraneous noise. And when somebody comes to see you in that setting, they're like, how can you possibly work here? It's crazy. It's noisy. It's chaotic. How can you focus? And my point was always, I can focus. Focus is fine. You can focus through anything. You can learn to focus. But what you can't do is replicate the flow of information that's coming in and being filtered subconsciously. And so on a trading floor, or say in the trading pits in Chicago, you can be standing there and you can actually not even know why, but know it's time to buy. And not be able to, like, there's no conscious understanding of why it's time to buy, but it's time to buy. And it's weird, but being in a room with Dave and Doug, and used to be with Chris, there used to be four of us in a room, but being in that room together, you know, Dave might be having a conversation that's wholly unrelated to what I'm doing, but I hear something and it sparks something in my mind, and I know there's a call I need to make, or I know when that guy leaves the office, I've got to tell Dave, you got to do this.
Yeah.
And I can't even tell you why, but it's nice to have that extra information that comes. And there were just the three of us in the room, but I wouldn't have minded being in a room of 30.
Mm.
And I can focus. And you might say, well, you can't very easily have a private conversation. And my point is, there aren't many times in the life of Clearwater when the chief operating officer needs to have a private conversation. And we can always find a conference room for those few times.
Yeah, that's right.
So I loved it. I miss it. That's one thing I don't have now. I'm in an office by myself. I might be looking at the sawtooths.
Yeah. I've seen your office right now. You're not missing anything.
Well, but you'll let Joan come in and say hello. Or
well, when we were building the house, I had a, you know, when nothing's finished, I had put with pen on the wall and going to the office, no girls, and girls was G-R-I-L-S. And I thought it was funny. Turns out it wasn't. So it's gone.
It was not funny. You know, I get a kick out of Mike. And Mike, you do this and you probably don't even realize you do it, but we get this, these texts going among a handful of us.
Right.
And they get a little goofy and kind of some slapstick type stuff to him. Not with Mike. He just cuts to the chase. It's just a few words, and he can make more out of a few words than all the rest of us with all the junk we text back and forth in the evening. So
what I'm hearing here is I'm not very funny. That's what
No, you're incredible. It's incredible.
That's great.
So, hey, shifting gears just a little bit, talk to us about the mules and horses and the backcountry. I mean, you know my passion for the backcountry. You do it. I do it with a motor. You just happen to do it with real live animals. So.
Well, I've actually done a little bit of it with a motor, but I'm not as tough as you are. And it's a little scary.
Oh, no.
So I think that the mule is the original ATV.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're smart and they're self-sufficient and they're tough. Yeah. And I just love mules and I love taking them in the backcountry. And I really love it when someone else shoots an elk and I don't have to pack it out. I can throw it on the mule.
Yeah, for sure.
I just, you know.
You have horses also.
So in our family, we have horses and mules. And the balance depends on the balance of power in the family because my wife and daughters like horses.
And okay.
My son seems indifferent. He's not on his dad's side here. And I like mules.
Yeah.
And so right now we have more horses than mules. And when the daughters lived around us, we had lots more. Actually, I have one daughter that I think is a mule gal too. My bow hunting buddy. I think she likes mules a lot too, but it's a balance of power thing. So my wife likes horses more than mules, and I would have only mules.
Now, Mike, you actually trim their feet. Ooh. Can you shoe also?
I do not trim their feet and shoe.
Oh, I thought you did.
I could. Yeah. My dad used to do that when I was a kid.
Maybe that's what we talked about.
I think that's
part of
what we talked
about. That's exactly right.
And I think it was hard for my dad to do that because my father does not curse. And I think an essential element of shoeing a horse is the proper language.
Yeah, that's right.
So it was hard for him. And but no, I don't do that. But I train.
Yeah.
And I spend a lot of time with them. But I don't shoe them. I hire that out.
But so at the same time, you're with the mules almost on a day-to-day basis. I mean, this isn't just a
Well, they live at our
hobby.
House.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're working with them all the time.
I would say that was one of the things that lost out in the balance discussion is the mules didn't get as much attention when I had teenagers because they were kind of stubborn enough themselves, shall we say. But I like to spend time with the mules. I'll be spending time with one tonight and tomorrow.
Now, when you're not hunting, will you just go ride back in the mountains?
Riding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. We chose places to live here in the Sawtooth Valley where we can ride from the house.
Right.
And we do.
And yeah, that's great. Yeah,
like to ride. Like to get out in the mountains.
Also, super accomplished pilot. You have some planes that I've been lucky enough to be in. And between the planes and the sawtooths and the hunting and the sawtooths, a serious love for Idaho, and you've been to more places. It's just fascinating to spend time with Mike up there because you know so much about the sawtooths. Talk about your love of Idaho, the country we live in. I mean, I know sometimes I pause. We've talked about this, and you look at where we live and the opportunities we have here, and it's really humbling to be in America, be in Idaho, Talk a little bit about that, because I think some of my most inspiring talks with you, Mike, have been when we've had those discussions about just how blessed we are.
So the most important thing to me is freedom and the responsibility that goes with it. We've talked about this, that freedom isn't one of those things where you get to choose whatever you do and not accept the consequences. Consequences are the good part of freedom, right? Because you learn what was something you don't want to do again, and you get rewarded for the good things. And I love that. And I love living in Idaho, where so many people have that same core principle of freedom and agency. And, you know, let me take care of myself, and I'll take the risks and the rewards that go with that. And I love that. Idaho itself, you know, I was raised here, and it's something I learned from my parents. My dad has an incredible love of the mountains and the rivers of Idaho. He told me once that he didn't think that he ever needed to travel anyplace else, although he does, but he could go someplace different in Idaho every day for the rest of his life and be excited and entertained and enriched and never see everything. And it's really true. And I try to get around and I try to see quite a bit of Idaho, but it's wonderful. As far as the love of the country, I think the concept of our country is just amazing. It's so great that we had the founders of the country that believed in freedom and independence and responsibility, and that tried to put us on a footing that would last forever. There are a lot of forces arrayed against that, but I still believe that each person in their heart really wants to be free, even if they're afraid of what goes with that. And I love the opportunities that I've had in my life. It's almost hard to believe how fortunate I've been in terms of being able to see and do things and kind of make my own way.
Wow. Okay. Here's the big question. One day we were talking about you taking your helicopter and flying it to Alaska. Have you done that yet?
No.
Are you still serious about doing that?
Yes, I wanted to do that this summer.
Right.
And I had planned to do it, and I had everything planned. And for me, all that means is a rough idea of a route and a knowledge of every place I could get gas along the way. That's what I mean by everything planned, because I like to wing it. But Canada wouldn't let me across the border.
Right.
This summer.
Because I had the same problem. Yeah, right.
And so I was not able to do it. I expect that next summer there's a better opportunity, and I plan to do it.
So your range for the helicopter is what, three or 400 miles?
400 or 500 miles. Yeah, but that's a lot of time sitting. So I might have to stop and look at something and walk around a little bit, if you know what I mean.
You're going to have to stop a few times.
Especially if I take him and his Diet Coke, or Diet Pepsi, whatever he takes.
That's right.
Then we have to stop more.
What a trip. What a trip.
Oh, that's I look forward to it. But you do those sorts of trips all the time.
I was going to go this year. I was determined, since I was literally planning on going to Eastern Europe and riding the Eastern Bloc countries. And wow. I've got a motorcycle sitting over there. But the point is, I decided, you know, that's okay. I'll just go to Prudhoe Bay, and I'll just ride up and back. And I've done it once before, not to Prudhoe Bay, but the Arctic Circle at the time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get across the border.
Right.
And it was pretty disappointing, but I'm at Eureka, Montana. Oh gosh, a few weeks ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to try to cross the border.
Yeah.
And God, did they give me the third degree? And yeah. So there's
they
just no way.
Sense of humor at all.
Yeah, there was no sense of humor about it. Yeah. Besides, you have to ride about 5 miles into Canada, which made it worse. So they even inspected my everything.
Oh, yeah.
And before they let me turn around and go back. So
I've been a little concerned, because I fly up to Alaska. I flew 3 times this summer to Alaska.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
And I go up and I stop in Ketchikan or Petersburg or Sitka for fuel. Yeah. But as I'm flying up there, all my safety valves are in Canada. And I'm thinking, what happens if, you know, you I develop some engine trouble and I have to land somewhere?
You'll go into quarantine.
We're going to quarantine for a year. I don't know what the rules are. Maybe they'll just shoot me, but not with a pistol, because they only allow rifles.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so it's been interesting, and I hope that we get through that.
Well, we need to get back to normal next year. And let's just hope we do.
Yeah.
If you would keep crushing the curve a little bit more, maybe.
Listen, crush the curve's really impressive to me. And you've been an important part of it as Tommy and our whole group. But it's been really, it's an important point of pride for me to be involved with all of you guys. So,
it's been fun.
Well, it's been great for me to be able to learn from both of you. I mean, it's the first time that I met Bill was with Crush the Curve.
That's true.
That's right.
That's exactly.
I just didn't realize what I'd been missing.
Yeah, me too. The feelings are now. I'm going to come over for dinner sometime.
You better
to Stanley.
Yes.
Every time I go through, I say, "Gotta call. Have to call Mike and Joan because I know there's a dinner there."
So this big motorcycle came roaring down my driveway a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I thought, finally,
there he is. He's finally showing up.
Right?
It wasn't me.
It was Sandy Beebe.
Oh, wasn't
it? I didn't know he was a cyclist. I thought he was a airplane guy. So
good. I will be.
I thought it would be you though.
Well, Mike, this has been great. We appreciate your friendship and you coming on. And you in between elk hunts, Squoza San. So thank you. I'll let you go. One more question. Cause I do think, you spoke at our Inspire Excellence Summit and we recorded it. And I came home from that and sent it out to three or four of the CEOs that are here locally. And just said, "Hey, I know you weren't there, but you need to listen to this." Mm-hmm. And by just giving some advice, if you're a business leader out there, entrepreneur, starting your own business, you have some really sage advice that I've heard before. But let's end with that of what you would tell those starting businesses. What the key to your success was? Because I think it's really powerful.
Oh, gee, I hadn't thought about this, but I think the key to success is what we already talked about. You need to be doing something that is valuable to a client, that makes them more successful and more happy and more fulfilled in life. I think that's the number one most important thing. And you need to be better at it every day. So you've always got to be trying to improve. You need to make sure that everybody gets benefit out of it. Everybody being, first of all, the client. Second, your employees. Third, you. And fourth, the community. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do not just with finding something good to do and being better at it every day, but also with pricing things appropriately so that everyone gets rewarded and feels good about it. So I'm a strong believer in the market economy. I think if you look at the few places of our economy that are really dysfunctional, they're not markets. And two of those would be healthcare and education.
Yep.
And they don't actually use price to clear the market and to help people make good decisions. So I'm a firm believer in pricing things appropriately and being proud of your pricing and willing to defend it and not shying away from pricing discussions. And I think we've talked about this. I think the other thing is you need to have a sustainable life where you feel good about what you're doing and you're helping other people, not just your clients, but family and friends and having having a purpose in life that's really beyond you. I love going to work. I miss some of the things about not having a full-time day job, but I've got all these other things that I'm doing where I feel like I'm being helpful to other people in their businesses. And that's very fulfilling. I would be the first to say that there are lots of business people that are much more successful than I am and understand business better, or they're more innovative. But I'm always trying to be better every day. And I feel like there are some lessons I've learned that maybe I can explain to people so they don't have to learn them quite the same way that I did. I don't know what of that is the key to success.
The whole thing is awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. I love it. I love it because I think the way you're able to articulate that, I just think it's so easy for people to understand. That's what I love about you is because you can really understand it and it sinks in. You're like, that makes sense to me. And that's a gift because not everyone can do that. So thank you for what you do, for the example you are to us and for your mentorship of us. Cause it's awesome.
Thanks. We both appreciate your friendship. Buddy. You've been really good mentors to me.
It's been fun.
I appreciate it.
All right. You've been listening to Inspire Excellence podcast. Join us next time where we'll tell another inspiring story that hopefully helps you in your day-to-day lives.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence podcast. We hope you've heard something today that will inspire you to make a difference in the world. Join us again for our next episode.